So remember, friends, I told you last week to buckle up for these Gospels. These 3 weeks are long. And you would think that with the capital campaign announcement, such a long Gospel, that I would prepare a shorter homily. But I don't know if you're going to get that lucky. We'll see. I was reading up recently on this new technology called BCI, brain chip interface, that a few companies, including one that Elon Musk started, is developing these implantable brain chips and I don't understand most of this stuff. I was trying to talk to a neurosurgeon in the parish. I don't think Jason's here. No, I don't see Jason, but he's a neurosurgeon, so I was trying to understand this stuff. I still don't understand any of it. But basically, you know, they implant this chip around your brain, near your brain, and through, you know, manipulating neurons and so on with computer images and so on, they can do amazing things. And the two main things that these companies want to do is to cure paralysis and to cure blindness first. And they think they can cure paralysis by stimulating the part of the spinal cord, and then to cure actual blindness. Elon Musk has said that he thinks this will cure blindness. Even a person who never has seen their entire life will be able to see. Now, obviously, this is a rather controversial technology. I don't know how I feel about it. I definitely would not put one of these things in my head. There's enough in my head that shouldn't be there. I don't need another thing. But so I don't know how I feel about the thing in general, but I was thinking about this, right? They say in the gospel, no one has ever cured a man born blind from birth. And we may be on the cusp of technology that can do that. In fact, the one company has already tested on human patients in Australia. Another company's working on animals. So who knows where that's going. But I was thinking about that as a launching point for this gospel, because obviously it's about the man born blind, but Jesus really shifts the story at the end to wanting to talk about the Pharisees' spiritual blindness. Right? They're like, is he talking about us, that we're spiritually blind? And I think Jesus wants to make the point that the Pharisees' spiritual blindness and the blindness of everyone else in the story is worse, right, far worse, than the physical blindness that he healed in this man. And so I thought what I'd do is I would use the three readings to point out spiritual blind spots that we often have, right? And I think we can find one in each of the readings. So the first reading from Samuel, the spiritual blind spot is this, that we have this terrible tendency, right, to judge based on appearances. Right? There's, I think, one of the great one-liners in the Bible in that passage, right? Not as God sees does man see. Man sees the appearance, but God sees into the heart, right? A spiritual blind spot we have is to judge based on appearances. We do it all the time, right? We judge a book by its cover. We judge too rashly. We don't get to know somebody's story. We judge a part of their personality and flaws and define the rest of them by it, right? We do this constantly, right? And yet that passage invites us, right, to see much deeper. Because I'm always aware of incentive structures, like what does one action incentivize me to do? And if somebody judges me based on appearances, you know what that incentivizes me to do? Not be myself, right? It incentivizes inauthenticity, right? Because if I know somebody's going to judge me based on first impressions, based on appearances, based on certain aspects of my life, then I have all the incentive to hide those things, right? To not be myself, precisely because someone's going to judge me based on that, right? So it sets up a terrible spiritual incentive structure, right? In which we purposefully hide things because we know that other people like us are inclined to judge people based on appearances and not what's deeper in the heart. It doesn't mean we can't judge some things, and we have to judge sometimes to get by and to make certain judgments about things, But generally speaking, we should be looking for the heart of the matter and the heart of people rather than what just comes across on the surface. So that's a spiritual blind spot that I think we have. Second reading, the spiritual blind spot is to convince ourselves and to rationalize ourselves into believing that what we do in private doesn't matter. Right? So Paul talks about in Ephesians, he says, live in the light. Okay? Everything that's done in darkness will eventually be exposed. Right? And maybe that's only at the judgment, right? And where everything's going to be exposed. Right? But the invitation to me and the spiritual blind spot I see there is sometimes I think we convince ourselves that our actions, if done in private, if done behind closed doors, if hidden in our minds through thoughts, if they don't harm directly someone else, that those aren't a big deal. Right? And I think the invitation of Paul is, no, live in the light, that everything you do, even in the privacy of your own mind or the privacy of your own home, right, manifests itself somehow visibly. The way I like to see this in terms of like virtue ethics is every decision becomes part of a habit. Every habit becomes part of your character. And your character is what interfaces with other people. So if you cultivate selfish thoughts, selfish actions behind closed doors when no one's looking, so on, you will cultivate selfish habits. And if you cultivate selfish habits, you'll end up having somewhat of a selfish character. If you have a selfish character, other people will not like you as much, because selfish people are very annoying, right? Right. In other words, and I like how Paul formulates this in his theology of the mystical body, that every time someone in the body suffers, we all suffer. Every time someone sins, we all share in that, right? Because we're all integral members of the body, the collective. So another blind spot I think we have is to think that our little choices don't matter. They're insignificant, right? Our things behind closed doors, they don't matter. They're insignificant. If I'm not directly harming someone else, it's not that big of a deal, right? I think we bring that into the light knowing that eventually all of that will be exposed, if not in this life, in the life to come. Final blind spot is an obsession and fixation on the past. Right? I think we see this in the gospel. Remember, I tried to give you this interpretive lens last week, that in each of these three long narratives, there's whole groups of people that just missed the entire point. Last week, it was the disciples. They were literally out to lunch, right? Literally, they were out to lunch, and then they were obsessed with food the entire narrative, and they missed the whole spiritual encounter with the Samaritan woman. This week, if you notice, I mean, that's an unbearable gospel because nothing is actually happening. Everybody is just trying to question the origin and authenticity of this man's physical blindness. They keep asking him. They got to call on his parents. It's this whole ordeal. He starts getting very angry, right? The Pharisees are also concerned about him violating the Sabbath. Everybody is missing the point, okay? Because they're fixated and obsessed about his past. And that's a spiritual blind spot, I think, for many people, which is personally that their past still weighs them down excessively. That maybe they have some wounds, some baggage, some sins that it just haunt them to this day. Okay? Now, some of that is to be expected, right? I mean, we do carry baggage with us. Just can't often get rid of baggage, right? But it does, sometimes it can border on not believing strongly enough in God's mercy and power to help you navigate the present and the future with his grace, even though you have that baggage, right? It can get to the point that their past haunts them to the point, right, that it affects how they can navigate the present and the future. And I think the Lord wants to dispel that from us. He wants to say, you know what? I know what you did in the past, right? But you know what? With my mercy and with my power and my grace, you can you can live with me in love in spite of that, right? And to trust him on that. But I also think it manifests in how harshly we judge other people's past. We define them by their past. To me, I don't want to get on a cultural soapbox too much, but to me this is one of the most devastating effects of our culture. This insistence that we hold people accountable for things in their past to an excessive degree, right? I think it's, like, I often think about, if I had a smartphone in college, I would not have gotten ordained. I guarantee you, I would not be here before you. The things I did and said, nope, if those could come out, I would not be a priest. Luckily, they didn't exist. And so I had a community around me that could say, hey, you know, you probably shouldn't say that. That's probably not true. You should mature from that. That's really childish and stupid. Right? There was a community. There was a natural, organic form of growth. Right? Now we find things in people's past and we completely write them off and dismiss them. Right? What this is creating, I would argue, is a very paralyzed group of young people. I'm not saying young people here are paralyzed, but it could create this paralysis of action. Because you never know, you're going to do or say something that's going to be irredeemable for the future. I don't think anyone's ever going to run for politics again. Well, there'll always be people that want that. But it's going to be harder and harder, right? Because there's going to be so much from people's past that are going to be recorded, that it's going to be impossible to find someone that's flawless from the point of conception. You know, like that's what the standards we seem to hold. So we've got to be sure we don't fall into that ourselves, right, in our judgment of people. Just because someone has made mistakes in the past, that doesn't define them, right? They can grow, right? This is one of the beautiful things about working with college students, is you see the growth. And something they did said freshman year, they might have grown out of that by junior or senior year. And you get to see that without a harsh penalty, without a ton of punishment, right? But you see them mature, right? Which means really an environment in which that is permitted and cultivated. So a fixation and obsession with our own past and with other people's past, I'd say, is a spiritual blind spot that we often have. So friends, I don't know if Elon Musk and these companies are going to figure out how to, for once and for all, cure physical blindness. But I know that if we put the same amount of resources into curing spiritual blindness that are being put into curing physical blindness, we could probably make good progress. Right? And so let's this week, in this Lent, with this gospel, with the grace from the Eucharist,